Okay, so check this out. Last week, I talked about the new sponsor on the show, and that is the Path to Pain-Free ebook project. So Path to Pain-Free is a collaboration between two TMS and mind-body coaches. There's Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni and Duncan Clark. And together, they have written a day-by-day program for TMS. It's entirely DIY, and it has exercises that follow each lesson that's really going to help you increase your awareness and how your symptoms, why they're persisting, and primarily it helps you identify those beliefs and behaviors and actions that are probably interfering with your recovery. So Path to Pain-Free includes lessons on how to overcome pain conditioning and how to neutralize the stress response. Together, these two have really shared their personal and professional experiences, and they've combined them to create this program that combines TMS work with pain neuroscience. We talk a lot about neuroscience on the show. And so that is really what this is all about, and direct you on where it is that you should go to painoutsidethebox.com/path-2-pain-free for more information. All radio is dead. All radio is dead. January the 13th. Thank you so much for tuning into the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And thanks to our sponsor again. But I also wanted to give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. So Brooke, Carrie, Jason, David, Colette, Matthew, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Ashley, and Michael, and Mike, and Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jen, and Nate. Eddie, Jenny, Christina, Ross, Julie, Casey, Brian, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you all so much. If you want to learn more, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast to learn more. If you want to learn more. So today on the show is one of the sponsors, actually, Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni is going to be joining and talking a little bit about her story, or a bit about her story. And it's going to be kind of wild to hear some of the parallels of her and my stories. That's one thing that I always find so interesting, is like two people talk from completely opposite sides of the earth, yet even down to her diagnosis and the particular very specific injury that we were told that we sustained was exactly the same. And aside from her and I have never heard of that injury happening with anybody ever. So that's a little tidbit for what's coming. Before we get into that, I wanted to tell you a quick story. So since the last podcast aired, or since I recorded the last podcast, there was a riot at the U.S. Capitol. So if you're not living in the United States, I'm assuming that you saw that on the news. And it's been really interesting over the last couple of months since Election Day that I have lost some patrons of the podcast. And my only assumption, because I've heard from a couple of them about my political views, are because of my liberal democratic political views. And it's been a trying week, to say the least, and something where I have just been glued to any information that I can find or try to better understand what has happened. And so last Friday, I woke up feeling mostly like a nasal congestion type of stuff. And as the day rolled on, particularly into the evening, and then even worse at 2 or 3 in the morning, I woke up with what felt like, best I can describe, is like shrapnel burning in my lungs, and continued on into the next day. And then it was still occurring at night. And so I started to get a little worried. My older daughter was coughing a little bit, and I was like, probably should, especially with what I'm feeling in my lungs, I think it's worth it getting a COVID test. So I go and I get one done on Sunday, negative. And then I was talking to my wife about all this stuff, and she was saying, you know, maybe it's just TMS. And I started telling her, gosh, like I've been obsessed with posting on Facebook lately. I'm talking about this thing. I'm obsessing over it. And I go, I probably am TMSing it. And within 30 minutes, those symptoms banished as quick as they came. So the chest feeling and the faucet of a nose and all that kind of stuff was gone. And I think that, I don't know, I wasn't planning on doing this, but my buddy Brad Gutting, who runs one of the TMS pages with me, actually said something about it that I thought was really good. Let's see what he had posted or what he had commented, better yet. Hopefully folks are reading this and keying in on what happened here. Between a global pandemic and weird shit happening last week, there's a lot to have some feelings about, maybe some unpleasant or unacceptable to say out loud feelings, thought murders, things like that. Acceptable, expected, sensible sounding symptoms then emerge. No real cause for said symptoms is found. Hey, maybe this is TMS subconscious mind bullshit. Awareness and acknowledgement and acceptance that symptoms will pass. And he said, note, for most of us, symptoms won't always relieve that quickly, but the fact that it might take longer does not mean that they're anything serious. And so I'm happy to report, as I said, I'm COVID-free. I am COVID symptom-free. But it's just been a very trying couple of weeks, and I feel like that's probably going to be the case all the way till we get past Inauguration Day, unfortunately. It's the best that I can say. So I don't want to be a downer because today's interview is awesome. So again, Miriam, we've got this long interview. You're going to spend 45 or 50 minutes with us. And thank you so much again for being a sponsor. But here is Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, as always. I tell the story with enough oftenness, if we want to say that, of people that I get messages from that are in different parts of the world in places that I hadn't previously heard of. And I got a really cool email from somebody in Malta, which I had to look on a map, but it's this really tiny little island just south of Italy, which ironically I have a Italian flag tattoo on my left arm because that's it's the bulk of my heritage. And I've got that person on the line. I want to make sure that I know that we just did the pronunciation, but tell me if I get this right. So Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni, did I get that correct?
Yes, that's right.
All right, good. Hey, thanks for coming on. I've really enjoyed going back and forth on email the last little while, and I'm excited for people to learn a little bit more about you and your story and what you do.
Thank you, Eddie, for having me. I'm also excited. So basically, I came across TMS around 5 years ago when I was suffering from, it started with shoulder pain, actually. So I'm a rock climber. Oh, cool. And at the time, I was training pretty hard. And one day, I felt this pull on my shoulder and I wasn't too worried. I said, okay, I'm going to rest it a bit. And however, I kept feeling this pain weeks later, and eventually I went to a physiotherapist. Right after the physical therapist, I remember that we went on holiday, mm-hmm. and during the holiday I was fine, but I wasn't climbing at all. So after that I thought, okay, I will restart climbing and I'm going to be okay, and that was my assumption. However, when I did get back home, first time I tried to climb, I started to feel the shoulder pain again. And I went to physiotherapy again, and he told me to get a scan. The scan didn't show anything wrong with my shoulder. But they told me to get an MRI because they could see better. Eventually I did get an MRI and they found something called a Hagel lesion, which is kind of part of the ligament underneath the shoulder. It was torn basically, and that could only be repaired through surgery. But the thing is, when I went to discuss this with the surgeon, he told me, like, I can repair this ligament. I can do the surgery, but I can't guarantee that you're going to be pain free. Because from the kind of pain I was experiencing, it was really weird. It was in different locations. It didn't really coincide with this diagnosis. So, of course, that didn't give me much confidence because I thought I'm going for the surgery. I was going to pay for it privately. I had no insurance at the time, and I didn't want to wait for the public hospital. So I wasn't too happy with what he said, obviously. So there was no guarantee I was gonna be pain free. And I was also terrified of surgery because I've never had surgery in my life. So I was terrified of that. And I remember a week before the surgery, I woke up with a sudden pain in my thigh, which spread down to my calves. By the next day, I also got pain in my buttocks. I had sciatica pain on both sides. And I could visibly see the muscle spasm in my legs as well. It was like having a cramp that wouldn't stop, like for a day or two. It was terrible. I couldn't even sleep. And at that moment, I decided, forget about the surgery. This is even more serious. I have to take care of my legs now because I can't even walk. And so I went for physiotherapy again for my legs this time. It got a little bit better. I even took a steroid injection at the hospital. So the pain subsided a bit, but I mean, I still couldn't walk for longer than 10 minutes without intense pain. Obviously I was feeling very depressed because I had lost my hobby. I had lost climbing, and now I couldn't even go for a walk. So I lost the adventurous part to my life, and there were no more adventures for me. And eventually I also started getting nerve pain in both my hands, and I had to even stop working because my work involved a lot of typing at the time. So I had no idea. I mean, I thought there was something seriously wrong with me. A doctor also hinted at fibromyalgia, and I felt that I couldn't really accept that because I knew it was a chronic condition and that people didn't heal from that, or that's what I believed back then. And anyway, when I was at my lowest point, eventually I was Googling frantically, trying to find, you know, a solution. I was Googling all my symptoms, and suddenly the TMS wiki came up, and I started reading. You know, some of the things made sense. At the time I was on a short break in Greece, which had gone terribly wrong, by the way, because my mother had had an accident and we had to take her back home by helicopter. But when I did get back home, I just remembered to look into TMS once again. I didn't have any high hopes, but I just thought, like, you know, I couldn't find any other solution. Doctors didn't have a clue what was happening to me. I had lost everything. So, like, you know, might as well. And eventually I started reading up on it day after day. I discovered some exercises online, and I discovered journaling.
There's a couple spots I want to back up to. You had said that you discovered TMS 5 years ago. How long ago did the shoulder issue start, though?
It had started about a year before.
Okay.
So, yes. So the shoulder started a year before. Then the really intense sciatica and leg pain started a few months later, when I had started to feel really depressed about not being able to climb, basically, above my shoulder. So, you know, one thing leads to another.
Are you able to, can you recall what your shoulder felt like as your legs and the sciatica stuff started to come up? Do you remember if it lessened a little bit, or did it seem like it felt the same? Was it worse?
It did. I mean, by that time, my shoulder was never extremely excruciatingly painful, or almost never. It was only painful whenever I tried to do something with it, like climb or reach out for objects like very high up. Most of the time it was fine. And when I did get my leg pain, it felt like nothing compared to the leg pain. The leg pain was so much more severe.
Yeah.
As I said, like, it was having an intense cramp that wouldn't go away. And the nerve pain even more. And one interesting thing about the nerve pain in both my hands and the arms was that I had visited a specialist I told him that, you know, I was a rock climber or had been. And even though I had had no tests, as I walked out his door, he told me, don't do sports, don't climb ever again. And I remember walking out of that room trying not to cry because my mom was waiting for me outside. So I didn't want to upset her. But that was the moment when I decided that I would never be happy unless I healed completely.
Right.
There were people telling me, okay, you can get pain relief. I mean, you know, you can still enjoy some things in life. But I kind of made an internal decision, which I don't know if it was good or bad. I mean, I would recommend it to anyone because, of course, there are things which you can't change in life. But at that time, I decided that I wouldn't be happy unless I recovered completely. So in a way, I was a perfectionist kind of with what I wanted.
Yep. And, you know, one thing that's wild that comes to mind, and I want to make sure I don't glaze over this, is you have to be the first person on the podcast that knows what a haggle lesion is. So I don't know if you know, but that was the thing when I was doing weightlifting, and ironically, this was 6 years ago, which sounds like it's it was right about when it would have happened to you. Six years ago, I was snatching, like Olympic weightlifting. I was snatching, and I had a dislocation in my shoulder. And when I finally was able to get in and get imaging done 2.5 or 3 months later, the diagnosis was a haggle lesion. And she had said how rare it was. And the thing was, though, when I went online and I would look at what the symptoms were for a haggle lesion, I didn't have those symptoms, just like you. And there was talk of, you know, not being able to do your sport and that kind of thing. And the symptoms that I ended up getting next, like basically after the shoulder stuff, was sciatica and things in my legs. So it's crazy that there's so much, that there's so much alignment here. And ironically, I did go forward and I had the shoulder surgery, and the surgeon who ended up doing it.
You did have the surgery for the... haggle lesion.
Well, when they got in, they said for people that are listening that want to know about the anatomy. So the haggle it stands for humeral avulsion of the glenohumeral ligament, and it's sort of like the junction where your arm meets your pec is kind of maybe the best way to visually describe it. But it's not a common injury, and it's very tough to get. There's certain impact injuries that make it likely. Rock climbing doesn't seem like it would be one to me. But I had the surgery. And it ended up that it was fully intact. It was my labrum and my rotator cuff and all this stuff. But by the time I got to surgery, I felt, you know, 90 or 95% pain free. But like you, I had said, I can't go forward until I am feeling 100% better. So you and I, sounds like we have a lot in common in this regard.
Yeah, that's true. The thing is, I never got the surgery then. So apparently, I still have this haggle lesion, but it doesn't affect me in any way whatsoever. So, I mean, we can conclude that it's an incidental finding in some people. I don't know if it was the climbing that caused it when I felt that pull. I don't know if it was caused years ago, maybe when I was young and I don't know it, because apparently it doesn't repair by itself. That's really interesting. In fact, when at first I stumbled across TMS, I was doing most of the TMS work for my legs and my nerve pain. I was still convinced that there was something, that my shoulder was really structurally damaged, as in that my pain was coming from the haggle lesion. But since it wasn't bothering me as much as my leg pain, because of course my leg pain limited me, I couldn't even walk properly, I wasn't focusing on it at all while I was doing the TMS work. And then I remember one fine day as I started to feel better, and I was convinced that this was it, and I could see like the difference in a couple of weeks of TMS work and journaling. I thought, like, what if it's the same thing with my shoulder? I had this thought cross my mind. And I said, what if this applies also to my shoulder? And that's when I started. For example, I started to incorporate some shoulder exercises into my routine. Some stretches, you know, without the expectation of pain, because I knew that I, each time I was using my shoulder, I was expecting it to hurt. So basically I started to apply the same principles to my shoulder, and of course it got better. And about 5 to 6 weeks after I discovered TMS, I got back into rock climbing. So I did my first climb again. And 3 months later, I was back to my previous level. So I was climbing overhangs, which are like, you know, bits of rocks or caves that are jutting out. So you really need to pull on your shoulders. So, yeah, of course, that was such a big inspiration for me. And that's why I also continued studying TMS. I continued reading all the books I could lay my hands on. And eventually, I also took a coaching certification so that I could coach people with the problem. Yeah, that's my story, more or less.
What was your first exposure into TMS stuff? Was it Dr. Sarno? Was it like a Dr. Sarno book, or was it something else? Or what grabbed your attention?
I think it was. I don't remember exactly if it was the TMS wiki. I think it was though. I think it was the TMS wiki online, because it was a Google search, and eventually I was led onto the TMS wiki, and they have this free structured program, and I joined the forum as well. So I read a lot of stories there, and I could resonate so much with what I was reading. At the same time as I was doing all the journaling and learning all the lessons, I also read Dr. Sarno's Healing Back Pain. So that was the first book I read. I knew that some people were reading it and getting better. So, you know, I thought, like, why not try? I mean, you know. And yeah, basically that was it. Sarno's book and I would say about between 30 and 40 days of journaling, but not just journaling, also taking time out for pleasure. It was summer, so we could go to the beach almost every day. We were having our dinners by the beach because, I mean, there was nothing else for me to do. I had even stopped working. I was swimming because swimming made me feel better. And interestingly, I didn't feel the pain at all almost while swimming in both my shoulder and legs. So, yeah, that's for those 5 to 6 weeks, my lifestyle was all about either reading up on TMS or journaling or simply going out and having fun.
That's awesome.
As much fun as I could anyway.
Yeah.
I relaxed, of course, and I also started some meditation as well. When I realized what was happening, I also spoke to a psychologist, and although she's never heard about TMS, she understood what was going on and also introduced me to mindfulness meditation. So yeah, that was it basically.
Do you recall, like, you know, early on when you're on the wiki and you're reading Sarno's book and stuff, like, I mean, how did it grasp your attention? There are so many. The type of emails that I get more than anything are from people that have said, I've read all this stuff and I understand it and I kind of believe it, but, you know, not necessarily all the way and all this kind of stuff. Were you locked in, like, right away? Or, I mean, did it take some time for you to even think that this was a legitimate, you know, that mind-body syndrome was even a legitimate thing? Because I think sometimes that's a big hurdle for people. So where do you fall in that?
Yeah, I noticed that that's a problem with people, that they understand the concept of TMS, but they're not fully into it, or they don't fully believe that they have it. In my case, to be honest, Eddie, I had tried so many other things, and I had given up already on other practices that, I don't know, when I started reading up, given my situation, because I knew that I had been very upset with the shoulder pain, I had had like a difficult time before the shoulder pain started, and there were just too many coincidences. Yeah. So it was very easy for me to accept this. And also, I mean, I could find nothing else. So I said, like, you know, I have to give this my 100%. It's the last thing I'm going to try. I mean, before giving up.
Right.
That's what I thought at the time. So I thought might as well go all in. You know, try it and then see. But yeah, I went all in, and I think it was easier for me to accept the TMS diagnosis because, as I said, I had multiple pain areas. Everything made sense. I could identify and resonate with what I read. I was kind of a perfectionist in that I didn't believe in pain relief. I wanted complete recovery. And I think, I think in fact the problem with a lot of people who keep on struggling, and this I notice, is that they want to have TMS, but a part of them still fears that it's not so, and because of that, they act in ways which contradict their belief in TMS. So let's say someone believes he's got TMS, but at the same time, he's afraid to use his shoulder or leg normally. So there's still a lot of trepidation. Or someone knows he's got TMS, but he's still stretching, you know, for the purposes of correcting something.
Yep.
So there's a conflict in a lot of people. I notice this conflict between embracing the mind-body diagnosis on the one hand and actually acting it out, actually embodying it in their day-to-day lives and actions. You know, and so many of our actions and behaviors are automatic. We don't even realize sometimes that we're acting with trepidation, that we're acting like a person who is actually injured and not with, like a person who actually has TMS.
I was thinking about that just last night, actually. I subscribed to this. It's more designed for like weightlifters and CrossFitters, but it's this 20 minutes a day yoga plan, or, you know, you pay $15 a month or $10 a month or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you get like a daily 20 minute instructional video on yoga and stuff. And I had first purchased this back when I was, you know, pre TMS, but all the pain. So like I'd had my shoulder issue and all the nerve stuff and the sciatica and all this. And I had bought the yoga program in hopes of that being the solution to the pain. And almost every time when I would finish, I would feel worse. I would really tighten up and I just feel terrible. And it, you know, so obviously I ended doing that service after a month or a couple of months. But then I had rebought it a couple of weeks ago because the intent now is that I'm really getting back into just doing weightlifting as opposed to weightlifting and CrossFit and endurance and all this kind of stuff, because I've got some goals that I want to hit in 2021 as far as weightlifting is concerned. And there's certain positions that I just want to have more flexibility so I can get into those and be able to, you know, lift the weight and stand it up and do all that kind of stuff. And it's just very different, because now when I'm done with these yoga sessions, I just feel so at ease, and it's so different, right? I mean, just like what you're saying, a few years ago, I would buy it with the, you know, I do it with the intent of pain relief, and now doing it with the intent of a goal in mind that's not pain relief.
Exactly. And that's a key word there, intent. It's the intent with which we do things. If you're stretching with the intent of correcting something that's structurally wrong with your body and you've got pain, I mean, that you're doing that exercise with the wrong intent. If you're stretching just because you would like to be more flexible, or if you're doing certain exercises just because you'd like to be stronger, then that's fine. Yep. But if you're doing them to get rid of pain while at the same time thinking or trying to believe that you've got TMS, there's a conflict there, because the two don't go together. You either have TMS and therefore you don't need to stretch in order to correct your pain, to eliminate your pain, or you don't have TMS and you need to stretch because you've got an injury.
Yep. What were some things, you know, when you did 30 to 40 days of journaling, if you're at liberty to say, and if you don't want to share, I'll completely understand. What are some things that kept coming up, or themes that were coming up either about your personality or things that you were discovering or maybe giving more thought about? Was there anything in particular or a couple of things that you can point to during that 6 weeks of doing journaling and a lot more introspection?
Yes. There were 2 to 3 main things. So there was the fact that I was stuck in a job that, it's not that I hated my job, but I knew that there was no progression. I knew that they would never pay me more because I was a freelancer and that's how the industry worked. I was a translator back then. I knew there were no opportunities for progression. But at the same time, I was very busy. They needed me frequently, so they kept calling me, trying to get me to take more and more tasks. And I had lost my motivation, and I had started feeling very frustrated and angry, because these people you know, wanted my services, but I couldn't even charge my own prices. So I was self-employed. I couldn't charge my own prices, and because they wouldn't, otherwise they wouldn't give me the work. At the same time, they kind of needed me so much. So yeah, an aspect of this was my career.
Yep.
And I'd also had some other disappointments in my career in previous years, which I felt had been unfair. Anyway, long stories, but I mean, I wasn't satisfied with my career, basically. And other than that, there was also a little bit of resentment. Yeah, it's a bit more personal in this case, but yeah, there was a little bit of resentment towards some people, which I had to recognize and work on, because I had been repressing this as well.
And was that all, you know, when you were saying address those things or address those people, was it really just the ability to sort of say it out loud to yourself or write it down, or was it actually going and confronting people?
No, it was more the ability of admitting it to myself, writing it down in the strongest language I could use. So in my journaling, I was really, really blunt, you know, and writing unsent letters. I got this idea from the TMS Wiki as well. So you kind of write a letter to a person and you're not really going to send it. But you imagine that you're going to send it to this person and you tell him or her anything that you feel, anything that's bothering you. So I did that with a couple of people, situations as well. So when it comes to the emotional repression side of things, that's what I did. And I mean, with people, I think eventually there was a time when I did mention something with the people concerned when I had resentment. I didn't elaborate, but I did mention that I had been bothered or upset. So I guess that helped as well. But you know what, Eddie, because I notice a lot in my clients as well, I think I attribute my success also to the way that I dealt directly with pain rather than just with my emotional repression. Because I notice that a lot of people get stuck with trying to uncover repressed emotions, with trying to focus on their problems, what led to the TMS. But the problem is by the time you have TMS, you've got a new problem, and the problem is your pain and your fear of pain and the way that you react to the pain. So I think I attribute my really, really, fast recovery, to the fact that I reacted to the pain, as Sarno recommended, basically. So eventually I built up the confidence to exercise, in fact, I remember I still had some residual pain towards the end, especially my sciatica pain. I could still feel it here and there. And I remember one evening I was walking at night. There was no one about. And I thought, like, what the hell? If this is TMS, I can just break into a run. And I broke into a run. It was just for a few meters. But it had been something I was avoiding.
Yeah.
And because I was still avoiding that, I still had a little bit of pain. And that was my ultimate breakthrough, actually, because after that run, my pain went away completely. But it's also important when you do something like this to be extremely confident that, you know, that you've got TMS and extremely confident that this will work, because you can't just break into a run having sciatica pain and still being in doubt whether it's being structurally caused, because a little bit of doubt, a little bit of fear that you're going to damage your body further and you might get even more pain, you know.
Yeah.
So
what,
so
sort
I
of,
think it's, yeah.
What sort of things, you know, do you find yourself, cause you know, you'd mentioned a few things. You talked about the journaling, mindfulness, meditation, physical activity, all that kind of stuff. I guess, is there a particular, you know, prescriptive cocktail almost, because there's a lot of different things in the toolkit for a lot of different people. Like, you know, the two or three things that I use most frequently are probably different from the two or three things that you would use most frequently for yourself, yeah. Not necessarily for a client, but you know, early on, what do you think were making the biggest dents in your recovery?
I think early on, the fact that I shifted my attention from my pain, from my symptoms to the actual problems in my life and issues, that already helped, because you're shifting the attention away from your pain. So your pain was supposed to act as a distraction.
Yep.
But once you start journaling and focusing on any areas of improvement in your life, you're already moving away from that distraction.
Yep.
So I would say that's step one. I also found self-talk to be extremely helpful. So each time I felt a twinge of pain, I would talk to myself or even to my body. And I would talk to my pain as I would talk to like a misbehaving child. So I would put myself in a position of power. So before, I used to recoil away from pain. I used to fear it. I used to feel kind of offended and disappointed each time I got the pain. But once I was learning about the MS, I started to act differently towards it and react differently. So I would say something like, oh, come on, you know, just stop. You don't have to be here. But if you want to hang out, well, that's fine. You know, so my attitude, my tone totally changed. And I think that's very important for people to feel more powerful and less of a victim. Because the victim mentality is very, very damaging and is very, very common within TMSers. So they feel unlucky. They feel like victims to their pain. I think it's one of the main stumbling blocks. So I would say, yeah, the journaling to shift the attention away from pain, self-talk, because it helped me feel like change my position from one of victim to someone who's more in control.
Yep.
Of the pain, and more accepting in a way as well. And working on the trepidation, working on my confidence, that it was just TMS. So if before I used to avoid mopping the floor, I started mopping the floor. you know, these everyday things. And another thing that's really, really essential, I feel. So when I started the working on TMS, My mother had to have surgery in hospital because of an injury, and I didn't have her to help me anymore. And that kind of worked out more for me. And because the attention had shifted more onto her problem because it was more serious, I started to talk less about my symptoms, of course. And I noticed how important it is not to talk at length and about your symptoms with other people. Even if you find them supportive and sympathetic, just describing your pain to other people, talking about it, puts you in a position of self-pity, and increases your attention on the pain. And as we know, like where attention goes, the problem grows. Yep. So, I found that really helpful not to talk to anyone. I didn't tell anyone I was doing TMS work, but even when people asked me how I was feeling, I just cut the answer short. I was like, yeah, not bad, you know. So it wasn't like before I used to vent and tell them how bad it was. I think that's very important as well.
Dr. Hanscom, I mean, his program, I think it's either the first thing that he prescribes or the second thing he prescribes, but it is that you're not allowed to talk about your pain out loud to anybody for 12 weeks. And he makes family members come with you to the appointment because he needs to get the promise from them too, and because he sees it as a form of enabling, basically, by continuing to, you know, talk about it. It perpetuates it. It's the woe is me kind of thing. And it sounds really in line with what you're describing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also what I tell my clients as well. As much as possible, stop talking about their pain with other people, even people who care about them, especially so actually. And also to stop going on forums, treating the condition, whatever condition they have. So if it's a fibromyalgia forum, if it's a sciatica forum, they have to stop hanging out over there while they do the work.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. So now, you know, you're several years removed from finding this stuff and really getting back to the things that you love to do and not having the fear around it and all that kind of stuff. Is there like a regular, regular practice of things that you do, almost like a maintenance plan? Is there anything like that or not really?
I would say that I try to incorporate meditation as much as possible. I do journal when I'm feeling really stressed about something. Not regularly, but I often feel when it's time, you know. Of course, I have got some TMS symptoms here and there during stressful periods in my life. But I tend to get over them pretty quickly because I know the tools and because I don't fear them anymore.
Yep.
I don't fear pain anymore. So that makes it easier for me to kind of accept it when it comes, to reason with myself and see why it's there. And yeah, I just couldn't be bothered that much. And because of that, I get rid of TMS symptoms pretty easily, so far. So yeah. But as far as maintenance goes, it's also important, you know, to seek balance in your life and, you know, make your happiness your priority and enjoy yourself as much as possible. Yeah.
How has, this is an outside question, but because the island that you live on is so isolated, how has the pandemic played into, first of all, is it even an issue there right now? And how has it played into, you know, because overall, like here in the United States, we're so on top of each other all the time that, I'm hearing of all sorts of people's different pain issues are through the roof, anxiety issues are through the roof, all these kind of things. And most of the time, these are people that either they don't buy into the TMS stuff or they just don't really know anything about it yet. Talk about on the island of Malta.
Interesting question. So basically, I mean, yes, the pandemic is an issue, and I've noticed that a lot of people have had more mind-body issues than usual. I don't know, tension, headaches have exploded, apparently, from what I can see, like on Facebook. We are not in lockdown, and at the moment we're being called like the paradise of Europe because most of Europe is in total lockdown, whereas in Malta restaurants are open. But you have to wear a mask outside. But anyway, I mean, we don't have those strict limitations. But yeah, I did notice like many more people getting symptoms during the pandemic, especially in the beginning, but also now, actually. And I also wanted, I also noticed something else. In people, I notice how much people don't value, free time, leisure time.
Yep.
I noticed that the pandemic, how can I explain this? People were blaming each other for going for walks in the beginning because, you know, there was all this like stay at home propaganda. And I don't know, I just noticed that, people don't tend not to value their leisure that much. Of course, you can have, you know, your leisure time at home. But there was all this, you know, other blaming and stuff like that. And still is. There still is. Whereas I believe that, you know, balance is the key. And, you know, because then there are so many other people suffering from mental issues because they've been locked in for, you know, they decided to lock themselves inside for months. And that's not good either. So, yeah.
So you've talked about, I'm doing a quick comparison right now. So the island of Malta has 515,000 residents. The town, the biggest town in my state has 745,000 people. So we're talking about a very small island with, you know, few people at least.
But it's overpopulated, because it's such a small island,
right?
And
there's nowhere to go, so
at least we have the sea, which is nice.
So you've alluded to it a couple of times, and for those of you that haven't put two and two together yet, so there's been a sponsor on the podcast that they began the last episode of December. They're continuing all through the month March. And Miriam, you were the person that had emailed me about that first. So this is your brainchild, what I've been talking about to open the show for the entire month of January. So talk about what you're doing at this point in time.
Yes. So for the past year, I've been coaching people with TMS. And I've also been collaborating with another TMS coach. His name is Duncan Clark from Scotland, and we've written an ebook together. And this ebook is a 25-day program. So we wanted to make TMS as, you know, easy to understand for people as possible. And we didn't just want people to understand TMS. We also wanted them to incorporate it in their daily lives. And so we included like a lesson each day with exercises related to the lesson, things they can start doing, focusing on beliefs, false beliefs, new beliefs that they should be incorporating, focusing on what I call mindset shifts, especially the way that people react to pain, people behave around pain, you know, things like fear, diffusing fear, neutralizing these negative emotions around pain.
Yep.
So we believe it's really hands-on, in the sense that you don't just read about TMS, but you also act it out in your life and hopefully recover from TMS very fast. And it's called Path to Pain Free. And at the moment, we're selling it on my website, which is painoutsidethebox.com.
Painoutsidethebox.com. I love the name, by the way. I'm a sucker for really great URLs and designs and things like that. And I really like the layout of the website and kind of the way that it looks and such. You know, one thing that I'd really like to emphasize is that so the bulk of the listeners for this podcast, it's somewhere around, I think 70% or so, 70 or 75% of listeners of the podcast are in the United States. Now, I am a huge believer in getting as much exposure to outside of the United States as you possibly can for really everything that you do. So I think that having the perspective of you and Duncan being on the other side of the world, I think it'd be really powerful for people, because even though, you know, we're all human and we're all kind of going through this TMS mind-body syndrome together, and in a lot of ways some of our symptoms may be really similar, our life experiences are probably really different. And so to be able to just get that kind of a perspective, I think would be a good feather in the cap for anybody listening to this that maybe is seeking an additional resource or maybe their first resource. I think this could be a really good place for you to
go. Exactly. And I think, I mean, one of the things we do is we try to give as many examples as possible, because there are so many factors that contribute to TMS and that sometimes we don't even acknowledge. For example, resentment is the strong one, you know, and even positive change can cause TMS pain. A positive change like a marriage or having a baby. So yeah, we try to incorporate as many scenarios as possible so we can have more and more people relate to this.
What, I'm curious on what your take on, you know, when you mentioned like resentment, and we sort of touched on this earlier when I'd asked about, are you confronting people or are you really just writing it or giving it some thought? But right along with that, I think about the idea of like a resentment or an anger with somebody. Are these things that you find yourself having to resolve? Or I guess maybe touch on that a little, because if you're talking to a client and they, you know, it eventually comes out that they feel as if they resent their brother, let's just make an example. What's your advice on what do they do with that?
I mean, everyone's situation is different. I can talk about myself. So when it came to a person who I knew I could never change, I think the way forward would be just to turn away from that source of resentment. So as much as possible, let's say that there's someone at work who treats you really badly and you know that things won't change. Maybe you've already spoken out to this person and nothing has changed. In that case, I would recommend that the person would start, you know, looking for something different.
Yep.
So the person will start looking for change. Because if a person will continue to expose himself to the situation that causes resentment, it's very difficult, you know.
Yep.
There are ways in which someone can diffuse the feeling of resentment a bit by looking at the positives of another person, by meditating and on the good qualities of another person. And this is, I think, a good idea with partners and spouses, because we all have, you know, we all feel resentment in our relationship sometimes. But I find it really helpful for me to sometimes take a moment, meditate on all my partner's great, you know, characteristics. And, you know, sometimes it resolves it, you know, all by itself. Because even the attitude we project to others, sometimes others can feel and sense our resentment. And that causes more and more, you know, lack of communication, and more resentment to build up. So I think kindness is also, you know, a good idea. And sometimes, of course, you have to speak up if the issue is really serious, or you, and the other person has no idea that you're being affected by this. So it really depends on the situation, really, and on how much you want the person towards whom you're feeling resentment to be a part of your life. Because if you know that the person, you know, you can, it's just a colleague, you know, and you can change your job, then, you know, you don't need to resolve the issue totally with the person. But if it's a partner and you value your partner's other characteristics and you don't want to break up, then you have to work on this. You could discuss it.
Miriam, this has been a lot of fun. You know, you like you mentioned, painoutsidethebox.com. And I link all this in the show notes, but, you know, again, thank you for being a sponsor of the show for the month. Very, very grateful, for that. Any last words before we get out of here?
Not really. I'm really happy. And thank you so much for inviting me. I think that's it, really. Thanks so much, Eddie.
Terrific. Thank you.